Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and we've got a great show lined up for you this morning. Of course, I want to welcome my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good morning, Todd. It's as usual. It's fantastic to be back on the New Media Show, talking new media. It's my life. It's my basically 6 days a week. So I'm definitely living this world, and then I've been loving it for, I don't know, a long time now, probably 12, 13 years. So it's great.
And you know, Rob, it truly is a lifestyle.
It is. I mean, it's really kind of an 18-hour a day thing, really, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. There was a Facebook thread that started earlier in the week, and I started to, man, just absolutely went thermonuclear. It was just, people got pissed. I should introduce Mr. Rick Calvert from the New Media Show this morning before I get into this story. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, guys.
Well, we're glad to have you on. We're going to talk about your guys' acquisition of the Podcast Awards and what the future is. But getting back to my story is, I had basically went on Facebook and the podcasting community, and I had said, hey, let us, this is a big deal. iOS 8, the podcasting app is going to be loaded by default. This is the first time. This is a big, big thing. And I said, well, at the same time, and basically I used the word, and I think it was all about the choice of words. Let's shame Google for not having a native podcasting app that's on Android. Yeah. Well, I'm not a cultural weenie, but it gets, oh, shame. Oh, you're a bully. And I'm like, huh? What? How does that turn into me being a bully? And I will not tell my audience and I said, I'm not telling you to tell your audience. I'm telling you to, speak publicly about Google not, being big in the podcasting, so not having anything in the podcasting space. And it was incredible. The backlash.
People accused you of bullying Google?
Yeah. And I'm like, okay.
I didn't know you were that important. I mean, I knew you were important, but.
Todd, you've always carried a big punch online, right? So, Todd against Google, Todd's going to win every time.
The last time I checked,
it's like Ditka versus the Hurricane.
I got out of the shower about 30 minutes ago, and I put my I did something miraculous. I put one leg in my pants and the other leg in my pants and pulled them up. And I think you guys do the same thing, so nothing special here.
Exactly.
So, gosh.
Yeah, I saw that. It's like, Todd, you're supposed to change your language to encourage, not shame.
We're very sensitive on the internet these days. And I'm, I guess I'm old school. I'm not such a sensitive kind of guy. So, it's true, though. We are, and people are too afraid now to, call a spade. And it is what it is. So. Yeah. Anyway, good morning, everyone. And when Rick proposed that you guys actually ask me questions about the podcast awards, I think that I thought that was, that's kind of interesting. The host actually partially getting interviewed. But I do want to talk just a little bit about the, Rick, you and I should just kind of talk just a little bit to the audience about what attracted you to want to, bring podcast awards to the, to New Media Show on a, basically having the whole piece, not just the actual awards ceremony, and kind of your thoughts initially on, and maybe we don't have to go into the future talk at this point yet, but if you want to talk about some of that, it's fine. But, what was your desire?
Simple answer, world domination. actually, the simple answer is you've done an amazing job, Todd, with the podcast awards. Again, since having the vision to start it in the first place, we obviously want to host the podcast awards and produce it at New Media Expo. We've done that for the last couple of years now. I think the first year was great. The second year was even better. And I think next year for the 10th anniversary is going to be amazing. I think the primary reason was we wanted you to be able to step back and be a neutral party. So I'll say it, you know, you have one competitor out there that you guys are pretty friendly with Liberated Syndicate, or the three different names that they're called. But, you know, it was impossible for them to kind of openly support the podcast awards because of your involvement with it. And this removes that obstacle. And any other potential obstacle of other people who might be competitors of yours, who or think they're competitors of yours, or anything like that. So it makes it a, you know, we can be Switzerland. You know, we don't have a product to sell people in podcasting other than the show itself. So I think that allows more people to participate. And that was our primary motivation. Now, obviously, it's good for our business, so that's not a bad thing either. But that was the biggest element that kind of went into that, us approaching you about doing this.
You know, and, you know, Rob and his team over there in the past had supported the awards financially by being a sponsor a few times. And, you know, as a kind of as a way of disclosure, there was a, you know, really it's, you know, from a nomination slash judging standpoint, and when we were basically going through the process. And for those of you that don't know, the way the awards have worked up to this point is the listeners nominate the shows. Then I have listeners from my personal audience from my show doing a review and getting around 40 to 44 listeners every year to do about 8 hours of work each was quite frankly, beginning to become like pulling teeth. It was harder and harder because I was asking, you know, that's a lot of work to go through that stuff. And then we had an independent firm do the actual counting from their ballots and then putting it up. So I tried to really keep my paws out of it, but I was still the one that held the keys to the database. So, I, you know, people could assume, no matter what, that I cooked the books. You know, they could have, you know, that could have been in a, could have been a accusation. And I know there was some veiled accusations before, but, you know, quite frankly, based upon who's won over the number of years, there's been a lot of Rob's primary podcasters that have been right in the top spot.
But so just for example, and you never called it, you know, the Raw Voice or the Blueberry Podcast Awards, which I think was a good thing. Yeah. And I think it's important for you to note too, Todd, that you owned it through a different business, not through Raw Voice.
Right.
And so another example there would be the Stitcher Podcast Awards.
Yep.
Which was a great program.
Yep.
But for anybody who's not Stitcher, you know, who might compete with them in any way, it's just not comfortable, even if they're all above board, and they are, they're good guys. I like Stitcher. It's just it adds that level of complication that just makes it difficult for everybody to embrace it. The Academy Awards aren't called the MGM Academy Awards,
right?
Yeah. It's a neutral party is really what we're talking about here, and I think that's an important component of any kind of a, you know, an awards event like this is that, you know, there aren't any of those kind of concerns that even are raised. And I agree 100% with Rick on this, that I think it's a great move for everybody. And I think, you know, Todd really gets something from it, too. He gets to see his podcast awards go to the next level, and he still gets involved. And it's really going to encourage other players in the industry to jump in and support it in a greater way, I think, because it's a part of the bigger kind of podcasting event, which is the New Media Expo, which is really the marquee event for the industry. So I think it all makes sense, and I think it's fantastic.
And, you know, and when you approached me a couple of years ago, and, you know, you've been after me, you know, nicely, not aggressively.
We're relentless.
Well, but you've been, you know, every time you would see me, you'd be like, hey, you know, we're so interested. And, for me, you know, the awards, and we can kind of get into this a little bit. I wanted to make sure that if I did sell or did, you know, let it go, that it would go someplace where someone would take care of it. And Rick and you and I have had a long enough history together. And based upon, you know, you do what you say you're going to do, you know, you
look sometimes it takes me a while.
Well, and sometimes it's because of, you know, there's financial considerations and everything else. So, you know, you look at what, and I know you guys have come out of pocket, you know, for the past couple of years for hosting the awards ceremony. And I hope people understand that as well. You know, you guys put on a great, after event and had, I think people got a few drinks and some food, and you know, so you know, you put your team, and you know, so I appreciated that a lot. And then you also, from you know, our discussions, understood what I really feel about the value of the awards being that, even though it's an industry event, it's really about the listeners, and who they think are put together great content, and it's not just a popularity contest either, because there's oftentimes the biggest shows do not win, at least in recent history, for sure, because you've said this to media buyers, the biggest shows don't always have the biggest engagement. sometimes smaller shows have bigger engagement than the bigger shows, and it can kind of be understood because there's kind of, you know, you're kind of cozy with a smaller audience, whereas bigger audiences, there might not be as much of a, you know, face-to-face connection there.
Well, and I think also a lot of shows haven't really promoted it or mentioned it on their podcasts, and I think you know, those fan bases of like you say, Todd, that are very passionate about the program and that the host is kind of on board with the whole awards process and things like that, it makes a huge difference too. I think.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, it's you know, it's, sometimes it's tough for podcasters to ask. You know, yeah, for the fans to go nominate them for something and they feel a little uncomfortable for. Podcasters don't have a problem asking podcasters to go do reviews on iTunes, but they, for some reason,
yes,
have a, that's a whole nother topic. And I think, you know, if you look at where the awards have come from and what we've done, I'm glad it's still in existence. Because there was a few years that I was like, man, is this really worth it at this point, you know?
Which sounds like a good place to start the interview, Todd, if that's all right.
Oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
Rob, you're
yeah,
you're the co-host. Why don't you start off with the grilling of Todd?
Well, I kind of want to know what the kind of behind the scenes story of the actual process and how you guys manage the influx of votes and nominations and how many people on your team are involved in that. And I know you get a lot of volunteers and stuff. I mean, it'd be great to kind of run through how the whole thing works.
Rob, here's the team.
Well, I know, but so, you've also had a lot of volunteers that have come in and helped also.
So, you know, I guess when I bought the domain, and I bought it kind of on a whim, you know, it's like you're in the shower. You're like, wonder if that domain's still available. Cause there was a land rush for domains.
Yeah.
And, someone
not
had already
pretty visual, Todd.
And, so I bought the domains and the derivatives, and I didn't get podcastaward.com. I bought Podcast Awards, hindsight's 2020, but, so, you know, I'm thinking, okay, I got this thing. What am I going to do now? And it's kind of funny because the guy that was partly involved in the design of the, Chris McIntyre, Podcast Alley.
Podcast Alley, yeah.
Okay, the guy that designed the back end of Podcast Alley is the same guy that built the back end of the Podcast Awards. And Tim over at One Technologies. So we know that Podcast Alley had kind of had, and Chris McIntyre and I were good friends at the time, and still are. Chris did some technical review of my book. So, you know, maybe I was kind of like this voting thing that's going on in Podcast Alley on a monthly basis. People, you know, maybe that was part of the driving force. I don't know, some of the mantra that got it started. But when I had Tim build it, I basically said, you know, got to be able to nominate, got to have the ability to export that data and get it into, you know, in a format the listeners can, that I'm going to have review it, review it. And then once they've done, we got to have a way to, you know, build a slate and do the voting and prevent cheating. Actually, the prevent cheating came later because we learned right off the bat that people were, man, they were trying to smoke this thing with bots and everything else. And it was like, you know, second day of, I think the first year.
It's amazing the things people will cheat at, isn't it?
Yeah, the first year we had to like throw out, and I don't think I've ever said this publicly, we had to throw out like the first 3 days of votes because it was rampant. I mean, people were like voting 35 times, you know, and it so very quickly had to put those pieces in to, you know, to basically make sure that people weren't going to vote 2, 3, 4, 5 times. Now there were still a few ways to get around it, but just you had to work at it to cheat. And I think we put in like 7 or 8 different rules. If I remember correctly, but really the, you know, that first year it was, you know, getting the code right. And really, believe it or not, knock on wood, that code is pretty much original, and there's not been a lot of changes to it in the out years. There have been a few things here and there, and we've had to change some stuff and upgrade to handle different databases and so forth. But, you know, we were talking last year, Tim and I were talking. Morris is the guy that built the site from a company called One Technologies, and I told Tim, I said, man, I said, are we susceptible to, you know, denial of service attack, MySQL injection, you know, what, are we susceptible? He says, man, he says, I'm almost scared to go into the code. So what we did is we implemented some database stuff where basically every hour I was taking a snapshot of the database during the 6 weeks. So that in case something did, you know, this is kind of back end stuff. But, you know, we got to the point with the infrastructure of the website that we never had a an issue, but it was becoming a little bit of a, for a better word, of a concern. And so that, you know, it's from a purely revamping it standpoint, Rick, you know, I think it's time. The site's looking a little long in the tooth, but the, you know, and really how the process was pretty simple. You know, you get the listeners to come in and nominate. We allowed them to nominate one time. And then when nominations closed, I have an administrative tool in it that just pulls each category's database out. And all I really would do here on this side, you know, it's listeners nominate shows, New Media Show, The New Media Show, Show New Media, The new show, and I mean, every iteration of a show name, listeners would put down, and you ask for the website address, and they would go, showmedia.com, newshowmedia.com, media show, needy media, you get it. And so we want to make sure that, you know, it's not about like the Chad thing where if the hole's not fully punched, we don't count it. We wanted to make sure that every vote or every nomination was, so I would spend, you know, probably that first day racking and stacking and making sure that we had in every database it sorted so that we had the, you know, basically the top nominations. And now what I would do normally is I would take like the top 50, and then we would build a separate spreadsheet. We wouldn't tell the listeners who are going to come in and do the review. We didn't tell them how many votes they got. They never saw that information. They basically got a list of 50 shows. And then they would go through and grade the shows. And if anyone that's listened to my State of the Podcasting Union that I gave partway through, there should have been some hints there that some of the stuff that we were looking for, visible RSS feed, contact email on the website, do you have branding? Do you have your own domain name? Just, you know, a bevy of things that they would go through and check on the spreadsheet and then listen to the show. Is this show really about sports? And so there was a variety of things that they would go through. And I think the spreadsheet, boy, I'd have to pull it up, but there's a lot of things that they looked at. And then based upon that grading of the actual site, show, stuff on their website design, because what we really wanted to make sure of is that not only were the podcasters creating great content, they were presenting it and making it readily available to listeners. So if we went to a website, if the reviewer went to the website and they couldn't find a place to play the audio on the front page, if that podcast was buried three deep, you immediately deducted points, because we all know bounce rates on the front page of a website. It's very, very high. No other RSS feed, no contact email. You know, it's like you would be amazed the number of, or even, it doesn't have to be a contact email, but a contact form. You'd be amazed the number of podcasters that do not have any way for you to contact them. You'd go to their website and you're like, dude, do you want me to be, yeah. You know, so anyway, that, and then what would happen was, is the group that we use, the accounting firm I use was basically my accountant here in Hawaii that does my taxes. We would get each category. Now there's 22 categories. Each category was reviewed by at least two listeners. So sometimes three. We tried to, if they had enough time, some of the bigger categories was hard to have it reviewed by three people, but we tried to have at least two people review each category. And then they would submit their grade sheet. And we've been very public about the formula that we used. And you would get so many points, and then we would paste in the total number of nominations they got, and that would be factored. It wasn't the number one show getting the number one in nominations, they had to be pretty stupid not to make the list, but anything from like 3 to 10, they easily could have got pushed out. And oftentimes the margin of error between the top 10 and the next 20 may have been 4 or 5 points. So it really, it's just the little nitpicky things that we look for on people's websites. And we're pretty public about that and talked about what we were looking for on podcaster sites for a long time. So then it basically was just that once that vote went into the sheet, I would get top 10 and they would send, here's your list. And that's how we built the slate from that. So the process was pretty involved because, I'd have to have meetings with the listeners, and usually we did some video chat, go to meeting or something like that. And we'd go over the spreadsheet and talk about, and I tried to make sure that they're okay. Subjective, you know, something's very subjective. Is the content about the category? And I told them, you know, don't get too wrapped around the details. If they're talking about their dog at the beginning of the show and it's a sports show, it's still a sports show. So, so that was probably the least of my worries on the voting. The biggest challenge was sometimes I had to borrow from other audiences. I had a few trusted shows that I would go out to. The hosts weren't involved, and I'd say, hey, can you send me some listeners that will help? And we would have a few listeners, because, you know, getting 44 people from my own show every year was monumental. There were some that came in every year and just did it because they loved to do it. They said that they got to find, and asked to do a new category every year because they got to hear new shows and listen to stuff. So it actually was fun for them too. So that was kind of the process. And then the voting, if you look at the voting, the biggest quandary, and it made people pissed off the most, was the daily voting. And the reason, and there was a method to the madness, the reason we did the daily voting was podcasting is supposed to be about engagement. So I wanted to basically see whose shows were the most engaged. Now, you ask your audience to go vote every day for you for 15 days, they gotta love you. And those audiences that came and voted, and tens of thousands of them would come every day and vote. I mean, in fact, we would see And we reset the clock at like midnight Eastern Standard Time. And it would immediately, you could tell they were trying to vote before the clock was up, before we reset the caching and everything that we were doing to track people from not being able to vote five times in a 24-hour period. And man, you'd be like, boom, that would reset and we'd get this flood. It got to the point, too, where we were sending out validation emails and the hosting provider, which we ran the servers every year on GoDaddy, I'd have to call GoDaddy and said, yes, we are sending 100,000 or 200,000 validation emails a day. And it got to the point where it grew to the point where we started to have stuff going into the spam folder because no matter what, we were whitelisted, it was still causing an issue. So then we scaled it back and I told Tim, okay, do a one in five validation. Every fifth vote, send a validation email. It kind of is a way to spot check because we just couldn't handle the email volume outgoing. The server did fine, but we were, you know, there was issues. I never got my validation email. So then at the end, because we were having those issues at least 1 year, I would have to go back and I said, okay, did this IP, they voted all 15 days. They didn't validate 3 days in a row. I'm pretty positive that guy is the real deal. And we kind of ran some software algorithms to validate those votes. And, you know, the year we had some email troubles. It wasn't perfect, but what I always would do is I would take the original, basically before we did any, I guess for a better word, filtering, I say, okay, who's our winners? Now let's apply the filter. Has it changed the winners at all? And I don't think we ever had an instance where the actual winner changed from any filter we had to apply because of a validation. So we did do that cross-check in the system just as a way of another validation to make sure we weren't screwing someone out of an award that they were rightly had won.
So didn't you guys have some issues with some bots doing some voting at some point?
Yeah. And but luckily bots are pretty stupid. They're pretty predictable. We had one guy 1 year, and the thing is it's easy because they're voting for the same show.
Yeah. Of course.
I always worried that there would be collusion. Four or five guys would get together and run the bot together. That's a little harder to detect. The thing is the IP filtering really helped. Again, we put a whole bunch of, every time someone made a move, we had made a counter move and pretty quickly, I think after a year, I think I only ever, I have to think back about this. I think I only disqualified, and I emailed the guy. I only ever had to disqualify one or two shows. And I emailed them. They never said a peep. They never publicly spoke out about the awards. They never said anything. And they were guilty of sin, at least in our opinion. That was the, you know, kind of the process. You know, and luckily in out years, the cheating kind of really died down. We didn't have, I would say probably after year four and beyond, there wasn't a lot of manipulation. Now, you know, I had actually people say, I voted at work and I came home and tried to vote at home and I couldn't vote at home and how come I can't? And I'm like, no, you are allowed to vote once a day from the system. But so that was the kind of the process.
So let's go back to the beginning, Todd. Sure. You had the idea in the shower. We're still trying to forget about that. And then you had somebody build the site.
Right.
Now, the first podcast awards was at
New Media Expo.
Podcast Expo.
Podcast Expo, yeah.
Not New Media Expo.
Yeah, Podcast Expo.
It was, I think the first year, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, was called Podcast Expo. Then the next year was Podcast and Portable Media Expo. Yep. Then the next year was Podcast and New Media Expo. Yep. And then the last year was just New Media Expo.
Right.
So you got the idea. Had you already committed to go to the Podcast Expo? Did you know about the Podcast Expo? You know, where in that process did you talk to Tim and say, hey, I've got this idea for a podcast award? Tim Berkwin, founder of the Podcast Expo, him and his brother Emil. Did you go to him and, you know, tell us about that part. How did it come about? Because that first award show was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I don't know what, a couple hundred, 300 people in the room maybe?
Oh, I think there was, there was probably more than that. There was probably
500?
500, 600 easy. We had
at the hotel there in Ontario.
We had a full house. Yep. I had a little stage with a banner. A poorly done banner. And we had some trophies that year that if you remember, they were different. The first couple of years were the trophies were really different. I don't think there's too many pictures of those anywhere. And basically it was just me. And I think what I did was, I think the awards was kind of an afterthought. I knew we had to do something. It was before streaming was even, I wasn't even doing video. I was still an audio guy completely at that time. So, I think I went to Tim, emailed Tim, told him what we were doing. And he says, yeah, we'll
so
make
where,
a...
Where in the process did you hear about the Podcast Expo?
It was probably...
Well, so when did the... So what year did the Podcast Awards actually start? I mean, because the Podcast Expo started in 2005.
So the first year we gave awards out was 2005.
Okay. So it was the same year that the first Podcast Expo happened.
Right. So... yeah, that year there was, you know, and to be honest with you, Rick, I don't remember the exact discussion I had with Tim, but I know Tim was like, yeah, let's do it. I'll get, you know, we'll reserve a room, or you can use the room. He basically was instrumental in making sure we had a room. And then I don't remember if we, I don't think I could, I think I emceed for like the first four or five years, you know, so, yeah, it was definitely working with Tim. Now, of course, when the Podcast Expo or whatever it's called before you guys picked it up, when there was a little lull there, what year did you guys pick up? When did you buy the property, Rick? You guys bought
2009.
So we must have had the awards at Podcast Expo for the first at least 4 years.
Yeah, you did. Well, I think
so. You went that last year to Vegas with the. When it was called New Media Expo, you guys did the awards there.
Yeah.
And I think, Todd, 1 or 2 years, you did it all online.
Right. There was I think the first year Rick was in New York. There was two, maybe three years that we did it right here. Now, I didn't start video podcasting until like episode 670. So there was... So that would have been like year six. So I started in 2004. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So yeah, 2009 would have been the first year. Makes sense. 2009 would have been the first year I did the awards here live, and I blew Ustream out. We had, you know, I warned them, hey, this is coming. Yeah, this is going to be big. You need to be prepared. And when the viewer count went up beyond 15,000, they collapsed. And someone was paying attention, and in about 30 minutes into it, they put more servers online, and we were able to recover, and things were, I was streaming, just people were like, you know, it was like that on the other side. But... that was one of the first uses of Skype, where we had someone come in via Skype and do their... And that was kind of... So here I've got, you know, the two channels, and, you know, the instructions to 220 podcasters were, do not dial until you hear your name.
And, of course, they didn't follow the instructions.
Well, we had jokers. We had folks in there.
That's right.
We had some shows that... One guy, we had one show that didn't call in, and we had someone call in and pretend to be the other show. Oh man, they received the first. I just remember this. They received the first permanent banning from the Podcast Awards. I think 2 years after that, I forgave them and let them. But the following year, they were not eligible to participate. But, you know, here I am trying to do this. And they were a comedy podcast, if I remember correctly. I was so pissed.
Yeah, didn't they come in and kind of heckle you or something like that? It's almost like, you know, in a live event, you know, somebody's back in the audience yelling at you or something. But it's kind of the same thing.
Right? Yeah, it was. And, you know, I don't think most people understand. Rick, you know, you already know, but because guess what? Your turn. the abuse, the absolute, you know, I would get thousands of like, thank you, my God, you know, appreciate everything you've done. But it would be the 100 or so, like, I want to kill you emails, you know? I mean,
you're evil.
Oh my God. You know, just, you know, and I just, and for years I read those and then I just started deleting them. I didn't even read them because, there was times it got pretty vicious, and generally a host would turn their audiences loose on me, and gaming shows in particular were the most vicious.
Oh, yeah, the griefers,
most vicious. So they would like, oh, that was a scam, that was a setup, they didn't win, you know, here's his email, tell him what you think. And man, oh man, and it would be, and I, you know, oftentimes I wouldn't tell a listener between a podcaster because I didn't know some of these folks. And boy, oh boy, the grief, it would just, the email would just rock and roll in. It was, and it, you know, right. It's usually, I could hear my inbox during the, when we were doing the online deal, I could hear my inbox, ding, 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 ding. and several folks have said, hey, I'm going to start my own awards. And many have said that and tried and never did it.
You know, it's funny that, has there been another podcast awards ever that you're aware of?
Yeah,
there's a European one I've seen at least happen once. I don't know if it's happened any other times
It does.
Yeah, it's been multiple years.
Yeah.
But there's multiple blogging award shows.
Yeah, the only other one I know
is... Or not
is,
shows, but blog awards.
Oh, gosh. Maybe the guys in the chat room can hat me. What's the name of it? It's not Comic-Con. Man, there's another group that does them, but they're real focused.
Oh, the Webby Awards do have some podcasting categories.
Yeah, there's another group.
And the Shorty Awards.
It'll come to me, there's another group that does
Dragon
some.
Dragon
Con? Yeah, so I think it's at Dragon Con. Someone does, I have to look.
But it's really for fiction podcasters, I think.
Yeah, and storytellers and that type of stuff, yeah. They've got pretty short list of categories, but they're very, very, very specific.
So that last year that you did the show at New Media Expo in Vegas, I remember very clearly Tim's blog post after the show, and he's corrected me a couple of times when I've characterized the tone of that post, but it wasn't good. He was like, basically, I'm done. And I remember so many podcasters complaining that Vegas was going to be horrible. The town's too big. I think you were one of those people, Todd, saying, you know, we should be in Ontario.
Well, you know, but there was a reason for that. We are all in one hotel or two hotels.
But what was it like for the podcast awards when you went to Vegas? Did as many people show up? Because I wasn't there. That I went to the New Media Expo that year, but just for a day. I didn't go to the award show that night. I can't remember why.
No, I don't think the numbers were as big.
Hmm. Yeah, there's just too many distractions in Las Vegas for people to run off and do and you know.
So the
purpose of the Ontario focus back then was the podcast community. The community was very tight back then.
Let me jump into this real quick, Rob, because a little side. Yeah. Because I told you this before, Todd, you know that. Every show that ever considers moving to Las Vegas is afraid of the same thing.
Sure.
That people won't come to the show, they'll go gamble, they'll go to shows or whatever.
Yep.
And a couple of shows have conducted a study to ask, would more people go to your show if you're in Vegas or less? And I worked for a show that did that, and more people said they would go then what? So your attendance always goes up when you go to Vegas. Any show, any industry, doesn't matter.
Sure.
But everybody says, oh yeah, more people go to Vegas, but they don't go to the show. They're out partying and drinking and having fun. Well, a show called Pack Expo did a study about this and came back that the people spent more time on the trade show floor when they went to Vegas than they did in Chicago, where their show was originally from. They stayed at the show more days and they spent more time on the show floor. They gave that information to Las Vegas, who obviously said, wow, that's pretty interesting. So they did that study again and came up with the same result. So it's actually not true. Most people, when they go to Vegas, spend more time at the trade show than they do at any other city in the country. I don't know why that is. My theory is Rick, Vegas doesn't close.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure that that's comparing apples to apples on what was being talked about here.
I know, and that's my question because – you guys know this about me. I've always said the show needs to be in Vegas because that's like the big showcase and that's where we'll get the most attention. And it was the podcasters I remember very specifically saying, we want to be in Ontario. We want to be in this small place because we think we're going to get lost in a big place.
And I think, you know, and not to promote another show on this show, but if you look at what the folks at Podcast Movement did, it had kind of that same feel, and it largely because it was in a, you know, single venue area where there was, you didn't have to walk a mile. You walked off the elevator and it was really kind of had some of that same.
Yeah. It kept everybody under one roof. It kept everybody under one roof. People weren't running off going to other places.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're talking about here. It isn't that people don't go to the expo specifically. It's what they do
after
the expo's over.
Yeah, it's in the evening events. But, you know, you've done a good job in recent years of making sure there's a good venue event in the evening.
That's right.
And even the Podcast Movement folks, their volume got to a certain level that I left. But it was better from a – there was a certain amount of, and you've done that too. You've tried to bring the volume down a little bit on your evening.
I didn't want it to really be about us. That wasn't my point. I wasn't fishing for compliments, but I was just curious because, again, I remember this very clearly, how adamant, you know, a significant amount of the podcast community was and gave Tim a lot of grief when he moved to Vegas. When, you know, he eventually sold the show to us and quit, everybody said, yeah, see, we're right. You shouldn't have gone to Vegas. But our show happened that same year in Vegas, and the bloggers who were there they loved it.
Yeah, I just think, you know, that still there is a big difference between bloggers and podcasters, and we're different.
That's my question. What is that? There's a thing.
It is a thing. And the thing is, we're in love with ourselves. We're pretty conceited.
I would say that Todd, I'm not sure that the podcast community is like it was back then.
It's
much more fragmented now.
Yeah, it's true. It is fragmented. And it was very evident at a recent event here that it was very fragmented to the point of being divisive, I guess, for a better word. You know, someone was saying in the chat room here, 1 year early on, someone made a podcast circlejerk.com, which forwarded to the Podcast Awards. And what we did, there's actually still, that's domain. Probably someone, you should probably go buy that, Rick, right now. domain, we put rules in the system so that when people came in from there, we just used it to our advantage. We sent them to a page that was just loaded with banners, and so we actually made money off of them sending traffic. So every time that we saw that come in, we're like, oh, send them to this page. And one of the audience members says that that's how they found out about the awards, and he's been a supporter ever since. I just tried to bring the domain up. It's no longer in existence. Or I'm shunting it to ground if it's actually still.
So what's one of your highlights of the podcast awards? I mean, it's 10 years, Todd. It's a long time.
Oh, man. You know, I think, you know, the the accolades from the thanks. You know, there's really not one specific moment, but there's a segment of podcasters that even if they don't win, do appreciate what has been done and thank me for it. And I think that is, you know, all I really, you know, this was never about making money. And I think people need to please understand that this was never, you know, it was never about making money. And the reason I laugh is because the, you know, for first few years we had enough support coming in that we were able to actually give checks. Imagine that. I was actually able to write $1,000 checks to the winners and not only give them trophies. And then it got to the point where, man, are we going to make enough to pay the server bill? I think one year we didn't even have trophies. There was, I don't know which year, but there was one year we didn't raise enough money to have trophies. But, it was always about giving back to the community and having something where they could be recognized. So that, you know, that was the gist of it from the very beginning. And the naysayers will say what they will say, but and obviously there's no doubt I got exposure because of the podcast awards. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but I thought it up and they did it. So that is, you know, the spoils of competition, I guess, from that standpoint.
And Rob, you were there that first year and second year at the podcast awards.
Yeah, I've been
in Ontario. I mean, that was a really magical time.
Yeah, I've been to every single one of his awards, and every single one of the podcast expos. And Todd, I think you have as well, right?
Yeah, I've been to every I even came out to the one in New York. Was there for that one as well. So, you know, and it was, you know, it was pretty cool. You know that, you know, if there's a great, someone's been doing a great job on a Wikipedia page. I've never maintained this. Someone else has, but there is a Wikipedia page about the podcast awards. That, matter of fact, we had to go back to using it, or actually had to go back and extract from it one year because I lost some data, and it's got all of the winners, all the categories that we've ever run. Now we've run the same categories for quite a while now, but you know, we did do some change ups. So, you know, Rick, if I was to give you any advice, if you're going to go and make changes to the categories, pick wisely, and do your lineup, because what it's going to be in is it's just kind of an administrative mess to deal with it in out years to change up the categories. And what we try to do is follow the iTunes categories primarily, and really what ended up happening. People, you know, that's the biggest thing I get. Can you add this category? And I've always said, yeah, I'll add the category if you will support 3 years of trophy and sponsorship money. And I was, that basically boils down to about $400 a category. And I said, if you're willing to write me a check for $1,200 right now, I will add a category. And then after 3 years, we'll keep it. And no one has ever been willing to step up and write a check for $1,200.
Todd, I know I asked you for a category, I think it was back in like 2006 or something like that. I think it was mobile podcasting.
Right.
And I think you did it for a year or two, and I think people got all confused about what it was.
Yeah, they got really confused about it. So
I
think we did it for 3 years. And, you know, and it's still, you know, there's a, even today, there's a, you know, little, the categories need work. So this is a good chance for Rick to do a complete reset.
So what you're saying, Todd, basically is you're handing us a mess.
No, not at all. I think just you're just gonna have to tweak it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make some tweaks.
What's a category, Todd, if you think is overdue for being added? You know, somebody writing a check aside. Is there more than one? Or are there 10 more that you would add?
Probably the category that would be, you know, the biggest breakout, the smart breakout, was tech and science. It was good that those two were separated. Boy, let me think about this. The general category probably could change. It could go to something else because that ends up being where everyone that can't get nominated anywhere else drops themselves in general. So that's been the biggest category I've had issues with, overlap in years past. That's where people have just kind of tried to, you know, they've tried to win a couple of years in one category, so they go after that general category. There probably could be a, well, I don't know. I've never had a email come in that really was like, wow, we should have had that. The storyteller.
Todd, I can
go ahead.
Yeah, I can think of one category: best audio podcast.
I think produced was supposed to be. That was supposed to cover that. So if you were going to change one from best produced to best audio, or, you know, I don't know, how do you cover that? Because there's video and audio podcasters. Do you have best audio, best video? We do have best video.
I think you just specifically look at shows that are doing an audio. It doesn't matter if they're doing video or not, because chances are they're doing audio as well. But if they're not, they're just doing video, then, you know, then they don't get out of that category. Plus, I think in the past years, there's been, especially during the big run up around YouTube, didn't you have a lot of shows that got submitted that were actually not podcasts? Yeah. Right?
Not as much as before, but, you know, there was, I would always laugh because there would be a certain percentage that were like, we'd go to their website and there was no podcast. It was just a YouTube video. And, I would actually.
Just to clarify that, Todd, a YouTube series or like just a one-off YouTube video?
YouTube series.
Okay.
Yeah. But they would, you know, there's no RSS feed. They're not in iTunes. You know, we did everything we could to try to validate a show as being a podcaster. Probably the biggest contention in the rules side of things was, you know, the top shows are obviously going to really make a run for the money, because it's hard to really, really beat the big shows when it comes to people's choice. And so I had enacted a rule that got me a lot of heat. So basically I put in sites that had won People's Choice or Best Produced, and it would be this year in 2012, 2013, would be not eligible to win People's Choice or Best Produced this year. So once you win it, you are out of the loop for 2 years. And sites that have won People's Choice and Best Produced in 2012 were not eligible to win in any category. That was the only big change I was going to make this year. I was going to eliminate those two rules because I've taken so much grief. Those are the two things that have caused me the most grief from the rules I set up. So I was just going to say, okay, fine, let's just let them battle it out. And we'll see who the best man or last man standing is.
And the reason for that is because for a couple of years, I think you had the same show win twice, right?
Well, no, but you could see, you know, like for example, you know, in 2004, This Week in Tech, 2006, MuggleCast, Keith and the Girl in 2007, Manager Tools 2008, ESPN Fantasy Focus Football, Tell Him Steve Day, Four Player Podcast, ESPN Fantasy Football Podcast, and The Morning Steam. Those were the top. So we never had, you know, two in a row on those top two categories. So,
I see. Okay.
But it was very evident. And really what I was trying to do is I was trying to prevent that. And, you know, was that right in retrospect? Maybe not. You know, but that was the one I got the biggest grief. Because then what happens to ESPN Fantasy Football? So what ESPN did, they were smart. They
yes,
they said, okay, baseball team, this is your year. You know, you go after it. And
but you know what? I got to say, Todd, you know, ESPN, big company.
Oh, yeah.
NPR, big company.
Yep.
Those guys put on suits and ties to come to the podcast awards first year. They thought it was a really big deal. They were very honored to be there.
Yep.
Then they saw us and like, oh, next year they dressed down a little bit. But they were promoting the heck out of it on their show. I heard them promoting the football and the baseball podcast. They took it very, very seriously.
But you know, here's the thing that really irks me, and this is my biggest pet peeve, and I can really go now.
You have a few.
If you're going to ask your audience to nominate you, have the at least, and if you win, at least acknowledge that you have. Yeah, and I understand not everyone can come to the award ceremony, but we had so many shows. I have trophies to this day that I have not been able to deliver.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. How many of those?
probably 10.
Wow.
Did
Any
everything
names you can tell us?
No, I'm not going to. I email after email, and I email the following, hey, got your trophy from last year. You want your trophy? Silence. But yet, they ask their audience to nominate them.
Yeah. Hmm.
Well. So, matter of fact, one of them.
Maybe those guys don't really value the actual physical trophy itself. It's more just winning it, right?
Okay. Would you like to have... This is, it says sample on it on the bottom.
Yeah.
Tell me you wouldn't want this on your shelf, please.
Yeah, you bet. No, I agree with you.
Who Todd, just so everybody knows, who makes the trophies?
It's a same company that makes the Country Music Award buffs. Same company that if you see the CMTs and you get those bullets, that's the same company that builds those. So it's not a slouch. This is not just some vendor. And we went out and looked. I tried to get the company that builds the podcast, I mean the Academy Awards, but they wouldn't even email me, because there's there's companies that do that business that build those trophies. And you actually introduced you to David and his team, so you've got an email in your inbox on that. But you know, these things are poured and then laser etched, and you know, they're beautiful. So, you know, and I've never, I always give them away, and I never had them here to show off. So I thought last year, okay, I'm going to order a sample. So at least I can, because what we were doing is we were starting to let the, and this is something that helped us out last year, is I let all of the nominees order a nominee trophy. So that, and we probably had 50 trophies went out last year instead of 22. Basically they just paid for their nominee trophy. It looked exactly the same, but it said 2004 Podcast Awards nominee and then the category and their show name. So, you know, we made that as an option a lot. And people are actually starting to come to us now and say, hey, I want previous years. And we actually did that. So, Rick, I'll make sure you get all those emails of those folks if you want to let them order a previous year trophy. And all I do is just go back and verify you can get one, and we authorize them to order one.
Hey, Todd, I did a quick search for the Wayback Machine and found, I sent you a link in your email that you can actually go back and see every one of your pages.
Oh.
Going back to when you launched the site back in 2005.
I love the Wayback Machine.
Yeah. So you might want to, we might want to put a post to that or something like that, so people can go back and see what the site looked like back each of those years.
Oh, that's interesting. So this is the site has not changed.
Yeah.
You know, it's large. Oops, I bring it up on the screen so people can see it. You know, and I guess it needs to go without saying here that the folks have saved us, and my biggest smart thing I ever did was opening it up and let the podcasters become sponsors. And that was, I don't know when I did that. I think we were I was desperate for money, and I was like, how do I do this? I basically went back and said, we're going to open this up. I set it at a price point that was, reasonable. We've had podcasters come in and even want to be corporate sponsors that have, in some years I've had to negotiate, try to negotiate a rate just to try to get the spot filled. So that definitely is was something that carried us, was that. Now let me go ahead and run this through here. Let's see. Let's pick another year. Oh, that's kind of cool.
So one thing that I remember for the last couple of years, the first year it was everybody just felt good to be there, right?
Yeah.
This sense of camaraderie was really amazing. What I remember from 2013 and from last year is many of the podcasters and their acceptance speeches, they're so funny.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an entertaining show.
Yeah.
I remember the guy in 2013, he came up to the podium and he had like a whole stack of papers, like he was going to read this big, long acceptance speech, you know, and he kept sorting through, make sure he got them all right. And then he just goes, thank you, and walks off.
But yeah, so it's been an interesting ride, you know, for sure. And you know, we've managed to you know, I think even on the down years we had a decent event. So there was only I think 1 year that the awards ceremony was a little lacking, but definitely the last two
in
years.
LA 2011 in LA.
Probably.
Or 2012 in LA. That sucked. Oh, that was our fault too.
That was bad.
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah, that was the year I almost quit. That was close. that one was like that was close.
Yeah.
But you guys made up for it, and you know, look at last year. My God, it was fantastic, you know. And even though our MC got stuck in a snowstorm, the step in was fantastic and made us all laugh. And you know, David C. Lawrence, if I remember,
David H. Lawrence,
David H. Lawrence, David yes, Lawrence. Yes, yes. So,
I was just watching the. The podcast of the show from January, and the guy walked up. I can't remember who it was. He won a couple of awards, and he goes, "Oh, thank you, Puppet Master." When he comes up to David H. Lawrence, and Rob has a podcast, had a really funny acceptance speech, and it's so much fun, and
you know, and you know it, what would have been good last year. If someone would have had a GoPro on me the 30 minutes prior.
Well, me too.
Because the a different personality came out of me that evening. And we won't talk about it, but holy crap, I was pissed. But it was no fault. You know, you didn't know what was going to happen there, Rick, but oh my God.
You know, I got to say, I had a worry that was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about, what's the guy, Marshall Silver. He hounded me for months and months and months to let him give this talk. And I told him no, I don't know how many times. And you know, he's like, I promise it's going to be really good. You're really going to like it. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, just for the new media people. And, you know, anyway, the moment he started, I'm like, oh my God, my worst fears come true.
But, glad I missed it.
You know, I was in the mood that I would have been happy to have just went up on the stage and yanked the microphone away from him and said, you're out of here. And, you know, they're probably, well, I don't know. It either got booed or...
Nobody booed. That was the funny part. And the tweets from that were awesome.
Oh, my God.
Somebody said, oh, watch, he's going to throw money. And then, like, instantly he throws money. And David did a great job too, obviously ribbing him afterwards.
Yeah.
Oh man.
That I promise you won't happen this time.
So Rick, what I know we're going to the big stage. We're going to be using the multi-million dollar stage that the NAB folks have got set up. This is going to be a venue to just like, wow, right? The production on this is going to be crazy, isn't it?
The AV, I haven't seen the bill, but I've seen the setup of their AV at NAB. Probably close to $1 million worth of AV that they've got set up there.
Yeah.
And, so is that the same stage that the Bill Gates keynote was held at?
Yeah, same stage.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is gonna be big.
It's a big room. They've got bleachers. We could fit a couple thousand people in there.
Yeah.
And by the way, NAB is super excited about it. So they will be promoting it to that audience. And that's one of the things you guys, again, you guys know this. We talked about it the last time I was on the show, that I'm excited about is that, and I think the 10th anniversary is appropriate, that this will be a moment to where podcasters can shine on a stage with broadcasters. And they can see, for a lot of broadcasters for the first time, kind of how vibrant this community is, how successful this community is, and how serious it is. And
I think, Rick, one thing too that could happen from this is that there are a lot of broadcasters that are podcasters, and
right.
and maybe they may get engaged in this awards process as well and drive their audiences to vote. So we may see some broadcasters as winners on the stage this coming year.
So the worry that the podcast and the emails I've gotten so far is exactly that. They're saying, are the broadcasters going to take this over?
Going to push us out.
Yeah, going to push us out.
Well, I mean, but I think, you know, as you look at this space holistically, you know, anybody that has a podcast should be able to be involved, right? It's not exclusive to a particular type of podcaster, right?
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think the web TV community has this exact same problem, because there are, you know, Hulu, Netflix, HBO are producing original content for the web now. And the independents are afraid that they can't compete with those guys.
No, I think they can, though. That's the thing.
They can, and they do. That's the thing. And Todd, you said earlier, you know, it's not always the biggest guys who win.
Right.
It's they might have a smaller audience, but they've got a more engaged audience. So that was a question I was going to throw back to you. So I would tell people who are afraid of that happening that you shouldn't be, and that we are mindful of that. That, to Rob's point, yes, those guys should all be able to compete. But this is my question for you, Todd, is if you've ever thought about having categories for independents versus corporate or traditional broadcasters. I don't know if you've ever thought about that.
You could, but the administrative level on that's a lot more. It's, you can throw as many categories as you want. You know, the question then becomes, do you narrow the number of folks that are, you know, you have a slate of 5 instead of a slate of 10, or, you know,
right.
you know, how do you work that then? I guess that's, you know, kind of, you know, I guess, you know, what are your thoughts? You know, I guess probably the big question people are going to ask is, you know, and I don't know if you guys have formulated this or not yet, but what do you think of as an execution strategy? And everyone's asked me, when are the nominations going to open? And I've just been telling, well, I think sometime in January, but do you have
we'll keep the same timeline. You know, you and I have talked about this offline. We'll keep the same timeline that you have. So it's about 3 months from the time the nominations start till the time the awards happen.
Right.
And we'll keep that timeline. I think that's appropriate.
So that would probably mean around somewhere in and around January 15th or so.
And as far as changes, particularly for this first year, I don't think we want to go and make a whole bunch of changes. The first year in particular, we don't want to screw it up. So we want to make sure that we have some continuity there.
Yeah.
And, so, go ahead, Rob.
Oh, I was just going to ask. So, will we see the same kind of criteria kind of exist around what shows make it through the nomination process? I know Todd has kind of treated this process as a little bit of an evaluation of standards compliance. Around shows, you know, having feeds on their website. Rick, do you see it kind of staying along that same line, or do you see it more focused on popularity and content as the judging mechanism for this, and less kind of an evaluation of their support for podcasting standards?
So I think the first answer is, we want to try to keep it as close to the way Todd has done it in the past as possible.
Yeah.
Again, just for consistency for this first year in particular. Mm-hmm. The compliance, as you said, Rob, to podcasting standards, I think that's kind of a given, right? That's the entry point. As far as changing the criteria for selecting the winners or the process for selecting the winners, I can't give that answer yet because we want to ask the community what they think. Now, again, Todd's already warned me, you know, you're going to get a million different answers and there's no way you'll make everybody happy. So it very well could stay exactly the same way that it is. Or we could have some very minor changes this first year. And I don't yet know what those are. But we, people who are listening to the show right now, I would love to have that feedback, and I'll have a post going up asking people for that feedback and doing some surveys of folks that have been nominated in the past to ask them, what would you do different if we were to change anything? But we're very, very mindful and of the responsibility we have to not come in and just change things and say, oh, we know a whole better way to do this. That's it. For, as Todd said, it'll get thousands of people say, you know, great job and thank you, and a couple hundred saying, you know, you're the devil and we hate you. That's a pretty good ratio. So if we could stick to that, I'd be happy. But again, I think as, and I'll throw this back to both of you guys because you've seen this evolve from the beginning. Podcasting is different today than it was 10 years ago. It's far bigger than it was 10 years ago. And even through those lean years, like you said, Todd, where, you know, you weren't having the awards live and sponsor support wasn't there, the business model hadn't evolved yet to where it is now, and it's still evolving, but it was still growing. There were still more people podcasting, more people listening to podcasts through all those times. We're still at the very, very beginning. After 10 years, I keep saying this every year. I sound like a broken record. We're at the very beginning of this thing. It's a pretty amazing place. Mm-hmm. We're so lucky, all those of us that have been doing this for the past 10 years or more, to see this happen. And again, next year is another one of those milestones of a moment in podcasting history where we'll be able to look back and say, remember that very first show in Ontario when Todd had the idea to do this award show in his shower? Again, we'll try to forget that part. And then to where we are today on this stage with a couple thousand people in the room with this big production, live streaming. It's a pretty humbling thing to be a part of. So, like I said, we take it really, really seriously to not screw up what you've created, Todd.
And you know, so. It's hard. I don't envy you in the, you know, in all the decisions you're going to have to make on this thing. It's you know, I've always, you know, people said, well, let the audience nominate and then let the podcasters pick. And I'm, okay, how do you keep, and why don't you have a team of 100 podcasters that come in? And I'm like, I have an agenda. Everyone has an agenda. So that cannot be avoided in any way you do it. So it's really, and I think that you'll be able to have a better handle on it, Rick, because AKA number one, you're not necessarily a podcaster, and you'll be able to make a few more changes, I think, a little easier than maybe I could have and not been called out on it. But at the same time, you're never going to, there's nothing. You look at the Academy Awards. The Academy Awards every year, who makes up the Academy nomination group, the members, and what do? They always get blasted every year. Oh, you pick the same person and da 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 da. They even get, you know, and they get national or international level criticism. So they're not above it either.
Well, it's because a lot of these awards shows have an agenda, and it's very, very easy to see what the agenda is. I mean, people are people, right?
And some of the awards are pay to play. You know, those are the ones.
The Webby Awards, you have to pay for submission to be even nominated. Yeah. You have to pay.
Yeah, so, okay.
So I'm curious, Todd, and then Rob, if you could chime in on this. How is podcasting different today than it was when you started the award show 10 years ago?
It's just a lot bigger.
Yeah.
There's a lot more diversity in the podcast community now. It's there's content genres that kind of exist as separate from kind of a greater community. I think that the variety of content is much greater than it was. I think it's reached a point where it is a mass medium, and its genres of content are spanning that. And I think broadcast is coming into it very quickly. And all that talent and all those resources are coming into it very quickly because they see that the consumption of media is going digital and they want to be involved. And I think you're exactly, Rick. I think this year at your event is going to be a significant inflection point in on-demand, podcasting or whatever you want to call it, on-demand radio. It's just going to be a significant shift that's going to happen. And I think that the timing of it is perfect. But I think it is a very different space than it was back in 2005. It's just there's so many more people involved.
I think, too, there's the indie folks are still, that's one thing that the independent folks that have been in this a while have a head start. They understand, all the tricks of the trade. But those big dollars are definitely coming that are going to, you face it, you're not going to compete with a Hannity or a Rush or, a George Norrie or those types of big radio folks that are coming in. They're still going to demand the audiences that they are. But I think the important thing for all the independent podcasters to remember, too, is this space was all about an equalizing voice. And we still... no matter if those big folks come in or not, and if the space changes and the celebrities come in, we have the ability to have an equal voice or bigger than they do. And I think that's that's why podcasting is the way it is today. It's the genre from the beginning was pick up the mic, say what you got to say, and you can do it. And again, people are creating audio long before podcasting. It was just the distribution mechanism that really, at the time, made it explode. And I still think it's still a very important piece of the entire pie, for a better word. The space still runs on RSS.
Yeah, and I think that, Todd, you're exactly correct. The whole new media landscape has been all about leveling the playing field. And, all you have to do is look at YouTube, and I think you can see that. I see it down in LA all the time. Those YouTube celebrities that never came from broadcast are the big stars down there now. Yeah. And it came from the online side. It didn't come from major media.
Did I bring up on the last time I was on the show, you guys, that Variety did a study about a month ago where they asked teenagers, 14 to 18 American teenagers, who their favorite celebrities were. Mm-hmm. And 6 of the top 10 were YouTube stars, not mainstream celebrities.
That doesn't bode well for the industry as a whole. They're so screwed, and I love it.
Well, but we're a little biased about YouTube, so it's all right.
Well, I think it's great that those YouTube stars are that they're the celebrities. That's what I'm saying. The big media folks are
are screwed.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
okay.
What I'm saying.
Okay, I took it just the opposite. So
now,
Todd's not taking on Google twice in one day.
Of course, Dave Jackson's in the chat room, and he said, girls, women. There's a lot more women in podcasting now. That's a big change.
Good one. Hey, tell Dave to call me.
Oh, Dave. Rick says call him.
right now.
That's a really, really good point, by the way.
He could hear you, by the way. Also,
that's right. Just talk to him right now,
Dave,
Rick.
Call me.
And also, there was a question asked earlier, Rick. Have you picked your podcast coordinator yet? Your podcast track coordinator?
No. So we're doing interviews right now.
Oh, Dave, so, yes. Call Rick.
Boy, I would about expect in the next couple of weeks we will.
So also, there's in the chat room time. Says a lifetime achievement for a 10-year-old industry? Question mark.
Well,
that was asked in chat room.
Yeah, we said we weren't going to talk about those kind of things, but I think it is time to do that. I think 10 years is time. The hardest decision to make there is who gets a lifetime achievement after 10 years, because there's quite a few for that first time. I don't know if you guys have thought about that, but
or maybe it's multiple people might be a good
right. But I mean, again, is it five people? Is it 10 people? Is it 50 people?
You just have to start somewhere,
right?
Yeah. And it's like a Hall of Fame of sorts, I guess.
Exactly, and I think it is time.
Rick's Dave. I don't want to put your telephone number over the air, and I don't think Rick's in the chat room. So I'll try to pass that to Rick afterwards. He sent your phone number.
All right, good.
The one person said the problem with a lot of the award shows is they become the mutual admiration society. That's true. Some of them do.
Yeah.
Look, either way that you do it, if you do it on popular vote, then you can say, you know, just because something's popular doesn't mean it's good.
Right.
And then if you do it through any kind of juried system where there are judges, then you can say, oh, well, the judges had their favorites. Right. And that doesn't mean it's good.
Yep.
I mean, the truth is, in any medium like this, new media, traditional media, it is subjective. It is personal taste. Mm-hmm. And there's room for argument. And that's why I hate that idea that everybody gets a trophy, right? There should be winners and losers.
Yeah, that's right.
But there also should be, when you look at the podcast awards in particular, it's more than just a celebration of the winners. It's a celebration of the medium.
Right.
Yeah.
That the fact that we have a podcast awards for 10 years now is a pretty awesome thing for podcasting, mm-hmm. for anyone involved in it in any kind of serious way.
And I think too often people lose sight of that, you know, and again, it goes back to the nemesis of why it was started in the first place was I wanted to have a venue for podcasting to be recognized. And that was, you know, it in above all things is to give exposure. And the folks that end up on those, you know, we don't take the nominees down off the list. There's actually a past winner stack too. You know, Rick, you're not only getting a gold mine from a venue or from an event standpoint. Just Google some terms, and you're going to find that they lead right back to the Podcast Awards website. We get an incredible amount of traffic just from people looking for new shows. They do best of, or and bam, we're right there. And so just the ability of listeners, and this is the goal too, the listeners to find great content. And why has Clinton, who's from Comedy Forecast, I think he's only been nominated a couple of times throughout the years. Why would Clinton put money on the table? He says, I will be first. He finishes, he says, you got my money for next year. I want my same spot back. And that's how we've done it, is kind of like a first come, first serve basis on, you know, placement on the website up to this point. And, you know, why is Clinton putting his money out there every year? Because he knows he may not be in the stack, but because he's in the sidebar, he's going to get a certain amount of traffic from the website just because of that. So, you know, and I fully think that those folks that supported the awards by coming in with cash, you know, they deserve all the traffic they get, but we don't want to take away from the you know, the important folks in the middle as well. But,
I don't think you can overlook that in any way, Todd, the value of the podcast awards allowing people to discover new shows. Because how many people get nominated each year? I know it goes up and down, but it's like in 40,000 shows or something.
It's like 4,000 or 5,000 shows. I think maybe the lowest year we maybe had like 3,000 or something, but still.
4,000 shows is a lot of shows to choose from, and unless you're Megan Inlow, you probably don't know 4,000 podcasts off the top of your head.
But obviously all those shows don't get recognition on the website though. Then maybe that's something you'll want to introduce. Is maybe every show that gets nominated gets some link on the website. I don't know, but who end up getting the majority of the traffic are the 220 shows that are nominated. In those specific categories.
Yep.
So, we're here. I do have a couple of things. We're almost at the end of the show today, and I appreciate you guys, I guess for a better word, interviewing me and letting me kind of data dump here. I tried to data dump in 8 minutes on the announcement video, but did that at midnight. It probably didn't come out as well as it should, but we did get an email from Apple, and breaking news right here on the show. They've made an update to their podcast album art. So we've been notified by Apple that they've gone big. I guess you could say the Big Apple has notified us that new iTunes album art specs have a minimum image size of 14x500, which is what it was, to a maximum of 2048x2048.
Really? The album art that big?
Yep, and JPEG. Now, here's the deal. They only want... They want everyone, please, 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 JPEG. Either you're doing 1400x1400 or 20x48x2048, and you can understand why the screens have gotten bigger on the iPhones. But if you're going to do if you're going to do anything, JPEG, and if you do PNG, RGB only.
Yeah, PNG is a pain in the ass.
Yes,
I hate to say it.
So if you do PNG, RGB only. So just save it in JPEG, whatever your design is.
Yeah.
But the minimum still remains 1400x1400 up to 2048x2048.
Jeez.
So
that's huge.
It's crazy.
I mean, just trying to deliver that cover art to any to thousands of clients out there on the Apple platform is going to take a lot of bandwidth.
Yeah. Well, you can make a JPEG that is, it won't be very big.
Yeah. So it's not going to be very good quality either if you crunch it down too much.
It's not too bad. You can get pretty good quality out of that. But yeah, the min will be 14x1400 up to 2048x2048. Definitely is the new spec. That hot off the press. We've known for a few days. We've made the changes in PowerPress, and that'll be the update.
So my question is, how are they going to use that big a cover art? it must be for 4K screens, 4K TVs, for Apple TV or something? Or
maybe.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Why did they need 1400x1400? I think probably my thought process is maybe they want the quality to be high because they're going to size it down anyway.
Kind of crunch it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, sure. When they crunch it, they don't want to lose, when you start with a 640 by 640 or 600 by 600, you crunch it. It's not the same quality as crunching a big image. I don't know. But that came directly from the Apple team earlier this week.
So Dave Jackson just asked, is there any limit on the actual file size? I would say probably not, because Apple doesn't really care, I wouldn't think.
But again, as Rob said, you have to think about your feed, how big that actually shouldn't matter, because you're just going to be linking to
the media. It's just pulling a file.
Yeah, pulling a file, so it shouldn't be a big deal. Same story.
But it is going to cost you more in bandwidth to deliver that huge image, though.
Yeah, that's just a thing. It's usually cached after the first time anyway. So
that's true. Some platforms, but not all platforms.
Yeah, they should. If there shouldn't be any good website design, we'll make sure that type of stuff's cached. The only delta there will be too is also that's the same spec for the ID3 tags too. So it's inside the ID3 album art as well.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. So again, Apple is not recommending that you save your art in PNG format, but if you can't resist, it needs to be RGB only.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I had a problem with that on the Zune area for many years too. With certain kind of vector based PNG files just never displayed.
So, I know we're almost, we're actually over time here, but I did want to ask you guys and I'm being very, very hesitant to say anything until after Carol and his folks can talk, but on October 1st, but any thoughts on the 1.3 million CBS decision?
Well, I don't think it really creates any kind of issue with the Electronic Frontier Foundation's effort to invalidate the patent. So I think we're still on track for that. It does set a precedent, I think, that a company settled on this, because I believe it's the first podcast patent settlement.
It's not a settlement. It's a judgment.
Well, it's a judgment. You know, so it's the first time that's happened with this patent. But as far as I'm aware,
they were going after 8-something million and they got 1.3, and they don't even think that based upon that judgment level that either party probably even paid for their lawyer expenses with that.
Yeah.
So I read that, that, you know, they won this judgment, but they still might be going away. I don't quite understand that. I mean, if they finally won some money, I would assume that would encourage them to go after more people.
Well, the EFF has got a patent validity claim, I guess, pending that won't resolve itself until almost the end of the year. It could be a Christmas present, or it could be a turd right around Christmas, or a piece of coal.
So if EFF wins, does that then vacate the judgment that these guys just won against CBS?
Yeah.
It's possible.
And also, West Texas is not, or whatever, East Texas, wherever this thing was at, it's never known to be very, they're a business. That's what that court does. They do judgments, and that area benefits for those judgments. But what will end up happening now is CBS will appeal, and this could get flipped right in a higher court.
Yeah.
So this is not done by any means whatsoever on either front.
Cross our fingers.
But it will allow the two other lawsuits to move forward with the other two parties. So I think that's happening at the same, probably right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of curious that they walked away or settled with Corolla. And that'll be curious to hear what that end up being, and then actually got CBS for 1.3. So I'm hoping that they didn't get the money that they got. I hope was so low that they had to discourage them from doing anything additionally. But who's to say?
Yeah.
But anyway, anything's on the way out, guys. So what's again, Rick? When's the New Media Expo dates and everything?
April 13 through 16. In Las Vegas next year, co-located with the NAB show. We'll have over 100,000 people there. The podcast awards will be the night of April 14th. I guess my last thing to say is just thank you, Todd, for having the vision to create the podcast awards in the first place, and for having the stamina to keep it up all these years through, you know, good times and lean times. And you know, it's obvious that this is a labor of love for you. Like you said, it hasn't been about money, and it's obvious that you love the podcast awards and love the podcasting industry, and you've taken that responsibility that you've had for so long really seriously. And I for one am very, very grateful for everything that you've done over the last 10 years to get us this far.
And I also wanted to mention one other thing too, is that we're starting to work with you, Rick, with this show to maybe kind of bring the show together with the expo, and kind of be a show that works with you. And I mean, we have similar names and a similar focus in the show. So, So here over the next few weeks and months, you're going to see some kind of partnership between us kind of build, and this show can support, you know, what you're doing, and hopefully that'll go the other way as well, and grow this show as well.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. We're excited about that. It's another one of those kind of no-brainer things. We're talking to the same audience about the same issues and mm-hmm. same interests. So it absolutely makes sense to us, and we're excited to be having a more, I guess, a formal relationship with you guys.
And so. I think, too, just so the audience knows, too, it's not that this show's moving to New Media Expo, too. We're still going to remain independent and do what we do, but we'll be...
Todd will still throw hammers at me whenever he's tired of taking on Google. He'll tell
Google,
everything that
right.
Rick and New Media Expo have done wrong. And I like it that way.
Well, you know, try not to do it too publicly too often.
It's all right, Todd.
Well, Todd is only living up to his reputation. He's always been very outspoken about the space and doing what's right in this space. I appreciate him for taking all of the arrows, as they say.
And some people can't, you know, and some people don't get me. So I guess they say I'm an asshole. So it's
look,
okay.
This is part of the new media space, right? That we can have these conversations,
right.
Even when they might be a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully it helps us all get where we want to go in the long run, which we want to see this industry succeed. Again, the reason you started these awards is because you were passionate and you saw the future. The reason we started the show is because we were passionate and we saw the future. We haven't reached our end game yet. When, you know, we'll have 100,000 people at New Media Expo this year because of NAB. But when we have 50,000 people, just podcasters and web video creators and bloggers at the show, then I will consider my job done. And again, Rob, you've been there from the very, very beginning. You know, there's something we see here that we know we're not nearly close to where we're going yet.
And, you know, and I think too, people need to realize too, even though I wear this shirt now, and you know, that's a big part of my day, the award started before this, you know, so, you know, that's why it was completely separate. That's why it was a separate entity and not tied to the company at all. So, but anyway, Rick, look forward to see what you're going to be doing with it. Of course, as I had already announced, I'll definitely be consulting with you guys as well, and do appreciate the kind words.
We're not letting you get away yet, Todd.
That's absolutely. So I guess they probably will be able to throw arrows at me for at least another year. And look forward to seeing what you guys have got planned. And I think the community as a large probably has to, because everyone was just like, great. Okay, what's next? And I think that's what we're all excited about is the what's next. So, but hey, everyone, if you've got comments on today's show, if you don't have comments on any show, today's the show to have comments on, Todd@newmediashow.com or Rob@newmediashow.com. Rick, if they want to reach you, what's the best way?
Rick@nmxevents.com. Or you can just send me a message on Twitter. I'm there.
Yeah, Rick@nmxevents.com. So we're still working out a transition strategy for everything, and Rick's got a designer that's going to be giving a facelift to the website and the back end. So we will be looking forward to working with him, and so we'll just let you guys know stuff as things develop. But we'll be. Hey, Rob, do we have somebody scheduled for next week yet, or?
I have Chris Gilbertson on, who wrote a book called How to Podcast Book. So she's one of those consultants that we talked about last week to be on the show. She's done Creative Live kind of series, the video series on podcasting. So I was going to invite her on to talk about what she's teaching people out there about podcasting, and kind of talk about that whole kind of seminar based, you know, instruction. You know, she's not into these mastermind groups, but she's into kind of doing the, you know, kind of teaching via seminars on how to podcast. So I thought it would be interesting to have her on.
And because I have nothing to do now in October and early November, I'm actually considering, you know, I used to do the 24-hour podcast. I am not going to be doing another 24-hour podcast, but I am thinking about doing a 12-hour, and it's still in just basically maybe next year, but I'm still thinking about doing a 12-hour fire hose type event where you're going to get nuts to bolts on podcasting in 12 hours. But that is yet to come to fruition. I'm still thinking about it. So I'll announce that here if I decide to do it. But that's it from us here at New Media Show. Rick, thanks. Rob, thanks. And everyone Thank that's you. In the chat room, thanks for being here today. It was cool having you guys on board. And wow, I'm looking at the peak. This got some interest. Where are the rest of you 280 people on the live stream? How come you guys aren't in the chat room? Thanks for being here. That's a record for us for live. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Everyone take care. And okay. Aloha.
Bye-bye.